Thank you. Thanks a lot for all of you being here. And first of all, I want to thank the publishers and the editors because of this idea of gathering so so well, uniquely equipped people to talk from different perspectives about right-based approaches. I'm very sorry that we are not all the authors here, although I think we will be more than the audience, but it's a real satisfaction. I have read some of the chapters and I really recommend them. And I also want to say that I'm speaking on behalf of Helen Gale, the Director of CARE International in USA, and Jay Golden, who is the Program Director of CARE Peru. We three try to give some ideas on how we are working in CARE with the right-based approaches. So what I'm going to do is just to mention how do we understand, how have we translated the right-based approach to our programmatic principles, which are the principles that orientate our projects and programs when we begin to design them and to implement them. Also, I will mention some examples of how do we do this in Peru, how do we operationalize the principles in Peru, and I will finish with some conclusions and lessons that we have now of our work, and also some challenges that we face in the practical life of trying to implement right-based approaches, which doesn't mean that we will forget about our principles. It just means that we need to understand it better in the field and to see how we could work better with them, because we do believe that just working on right-based approaches is that we are going to reach sustainable changes, and also we are going to not be the drivers of the change, but just to be the facilitators of a change that has to happen in different actors in our society. So it's already mentioned that CARE has a transition from being a humanitarian organization to a social development organization. We still keep our work in emergencies and disasters, but we combine this work each time more with more long-term processes articulated in programs. In the case of health, the program of health in Peru, it gathers work in maternal health, neonatal health, governance in health, HIV/AIDS, infectious diseases, water and sanitation, and nutrition. All these entries are gathered in one single program, which is the health program. And as I was saying, in CARE, since 2000 year, we began to see that we could not be addressing what we were calling then the symptoms or the signs of poverty, but try to understand why those symptoms and signs were happening, which were the underlying causes of poverty that many times are structural, many times need to gather the effort of different actors, not only one NGO like CARE, and we needed to address that issue. Therefore, you could see in the graphic that we have in our vision of poverty, eradication, and social justice, which is the name of this conference, that we work indeed in what we call human conditions, which is improving the access of poor people to some specific assets and opportunities of development in a way that is each time more sustainable, because the idea is not just to go for the emergency, but try to create opportunities, contribute to the creation of opportunities of access to different essential services for the people. But that's one level. The other level is working on social positions. That means working with the people to get them each time more engaged in the decision making and the definition of those issues that affect their lives. Those policies, the way the policies are implemented, understanding the balance of power, the imbalance of power, and trying to address it, creating spaces for participation and for the people to take action on their lives. And the third level is what we call the enabling environment, which is working with a different range of actors, especially public sector and public officers, to create the conditions for these processes to happen, but also to promote the fulfillment of obligations towards human rights that the officers and public providers of services have. No? So CARE is now working in these three levels at the same time. It's not only providing resources or providing some specific assets, but trying to create an enabling environment so the people themselves could promote, could intervene, and could each time have more things to say and to decide within the public officers. And in 2000 year, the different offices, national offices of CARE, got together to see, discuss, and decide which was our understanding of a right-based approach. And then we designed six programmatic principles that orientate the design and implementation of our programs. These are: promote empowerment, although now we call it promote empowerment and address the unequal balance of power. And then I'm going later about this issue of power, which for our understanding is at the core of the development of a right-based approach. Working with partners, working in alliance with other actors, because as I said, we don't consider ourselves in CARE the main actors of the change. We think that we need to identify who are the actors of any society that are the ones that have to drive the change. And we help them, contribute, associate with them to promote that change. Seek sustainable results, and we think that if we work each time more with different actors of the same society and promote this change of attitudes and improvement of capacities to intervene, the results are going to be more sustainable. Address discrimination, which is at the core of many right-based approaches of different agencies, as well as participation. Promote nonviolent resolution of conflicts. We do believe that many times when we address power imbalances or unequal relations between the society, we are going to also find in sometimes conflicts, but we also do believe that addressing those issues, we are going to prevent conflict between the people. We think that dialogue, what we call preventive dialogue, in a horizontal way, in an equal balance of power, could arrive to better solutions than the non-dialogue and the option of taking other kind of actions within the society. And ensure accountability and promote responsibility, which is part also of many of the right-based approaches of different agencies. For example, DFID, the British Agency of Cooperation, summarize its principles of its right-based approaches in participation, inclusion, and fulfillment of state obligations. No? We feel that our six principles are somehow related, close related to that approach, but also to the United Nations approach, right-based approach to development. As I was saying, we stress the importance of addressing power imbalances as a core component of the implementation of a right-based approach. And that's because working with the underlying factors that, on our understanding, conduce to poverty, we now ask ourselves, who are the ones that are taking the decisions? Why is a majority of, for example, Peruvian society is out of the decision-making process when there are things that have to deal with their own lives? We ask ourselves why a woman, a rural woman, that needs to go to look for health care in the moment of delivery, stands on the decision of other members of the family and can't decide by herself. Why a woman can't see for the health of it's her own body and needs the opinion of the husband many times in a more predominant way than her own decision. We ask ourselves, where are the gaps that justify that Peru is now a high middle income country? And besides that, there are terrible differences in the health status or the poverty status of its own society. And analyzing that, we identify underlying causes of poverty, and one of the most important that we have identified is the issue of this imbalance of power relations between the users of the health service and the providers of the health service, especially in the poor areas, between those who take the decisions, the ones that make the decision making, and for example, an indigenous people that are living in those areas that are being decided for being given to mining companies or extractive industries, etc. So we identify those members of society with less power and those groups who have the power to determine the allocation of resources or make decisions. We analyze the implementation of the strategies to promote better information and understanding of human rights amongst poor and excluded people. We do believe that participation should be an informed participation. We are not empowering people. We are contributing with some conditions. Empowerment is a process of each one, and it depends on many things. But we work with the people to try to create the conditions so they could develop its own position, its own view, and not necessarily our view of what needs to be done. And we try to provide technical assistance and advocacy to those who have obligations towards health rights, no? For creating these organizational environments for inclusion and participation of those who have been traditionally excluded, or their genuine representatives into the design, implementation, and assessment of social policies. So those are the six principles, and we are going to talk a little bit what we are doing in Peru with each one of them. As I mentioned, Peru is a middle-high income country. However, there are deep inequities, discrimination, and poverty within our society. There's a high incidence of morbidity, mortality, and prevalence of avoidable illnesses and deaths in poorer and indigenous communities. The difference, for example, between the capital, Lima, in terms of of child mortality and the poorest areas of the Andes in Peru is like 6 to 1, no? So we have one average of child mortality in Lima, and we have 6 times that average in Puno or Huancavelica regions. It's almost the same with maternal mortality. It's almost the same with the difference of the epidemiological figures in terms of infectious diseases that are almost controlled in the capital and the urban places, but are the prevalent principal cause of sicknesses in the rural and forest, rainforest areas. But on top of that, we have still, although there have been efforts to improve this in the last years, I would say in the last 15 years, still we have a health system that has fractionated between different providers, that has poor health system management and a weak monitoring of the quality of the health services or what has is happening actually with the people when they arrive to the health service. There are still some episodes, many frequent episodes of little respect on human rights, and there's no judicial alternatives because the procedures to claim your rights when you feel that they have not been respected are still long and very complicated. Sometimes somebody asked me which were the problems of human rights in Peru, and I think I was a little cynical, but I said, well, we have signed all international commitments, so we have international commitments that are not necessarily honored. We have laws that are not respected. We have policies, very good policies, that are not implemented. And we have managers who don't manage. And that's a main problem. No? We have almost signed all the commitments that everybody has signed, but the procedures to make the state accountable to those commitments or even to some policies that they have formulated by themselves, but they are not implementing it completely, is still a challenge for not only for international NGOs who believe in human rights, but also for the Peruvian society itself. But things are changing little by little. For example, in terms of the first principle, promoting empowerment and changing power relations. In terms of policy advocacy, we have made a partnership with one main civil society network in health that is in Peru, Foro Salud. Foro Salud is a decentralized network. It's a network of networks with voluntary people working on behalf of health and the realization of human rights. In 2005, CARE and Foro Salud, with other organizations, together designed a new law proposal on rights of health services users. We gathered 100,000 signatures to support the law because there is a mechanism in Peru that is called civic action, which is if you don't have a congressman that is presenting a law and you want to have a law presented by the people themselves, you have to gather like 70,000 signatures of support. We gathered 100,000. The process of advocacy was long, and just last year, 2009, we have the law approved. But this is a very big achievement for a movement of civil society that has been working together with us in a different advocacy spaces to get this. In participatory mechanisms for health management, we have stressed the importance of keeping alive a shared administration law that was given in Fujimori's government that promoted the people from the lay people out from near the services could form part or could integrate part of an administrative committee of the health facilities. So they could bring the voice and the vision of the people to the administration of the health facilities. This program that was tried to be canceled in 2000 year now has a new law that strengthens it, and that was also a product of advocacy of civil society networks in which CARE was inserted and other actors. Also in terms of analysis, in terms of making some studies, like our partnership with Physicians for Human Rights USA, to analyze cases of maternal deaths in which you could analyze by the story of the maternal death, which were the gaps in the health systems that are promoting that the still rural, illiterate, poor women could die because of pregnancy. This was, for us, a groundbreaking study that was presented nationally and internationally, and that called attention of the government and the Ministry of Health in terms of some specific things that they even, or they don't know it, or they didn't want to recognize it were happening. In terms of the second principle, working in partnership, you could read a wide range of partners. We have mentioned Foro Salud. We also partner with the Peruvian Ministry of Health because it's not just a matter of advocacy. We always used to say, it's just not creating the will. We need to support the skills, because we have all even had ministers of health that have launched national mobilizations on health rights from the Ministry of Health. But after launching this mobilization, the analysis and the capacities to understand how they could see their work with another lenses, a right-based approaches lenses, needs to be supported. So many times the decision is there, but there are not specific technical skills to implement the decisions. And there is where we come with other allies to support that those processes. Also with international agencies and local NGOs, for example. In Peru, it was surprising for me that in 2008, we couldn't say exactly how many newborn deaths happened in the country. We didn't have an epidemiological system of surveillance of newborn deaths. We always talk about maternal and newborn, maternal and neonatal, but all the importance was given to the maternal issue and very little resources to the neonatal issue. So we gathered with different actors amongst UNICEF, Pan American Health Organization, national NGOs, experts and scientific associations to create and adapt cost-effective strategies that have been validated in other countries and adapt them to our reality, and work with the Minister of Health to begin to work with more specificity on newborn health. Our opinion, for example, is that newborn deaths, especially in the rural areas, are not known, are not quantified, and they are going to be, in the next years, a very big problem once the Peruvian health system understand them. Also, we have worked with different actors to scale up evidence-based models for maternal health for vulnerable populations. For example, in Peru, we have had a successful project working with obstetric emergencies in Ayacucho, one Andean region. This project, with other Peruvian Ministry of Health interventions, contributed to the reduction of maternal mortality in Ayacucho region in 50% in 5 years. As I said, it's not only care action, but the specific addressing of obstetric emergencies, which was a neglected issue in that moment in the Peruvian Ministry of Health, contributed to this reduction, which was far more higher the reduction than in other regions. We have systematized the strategies with the Ministry of Health. We have operationalized, we have made like a toolbox on how to work these things in other regions. We have made a cost study so the regional presidents of other regions could say, oh, I want to work this, and I know how much this costs. And we have even provided support to the Ministry of Health to know how those costs could be inserted in the public investment system that is now set in Peru. So the public officers now have a relation on what strategies to implement, how much those strategies cost, and how they could improve this. In promoting responsibility and accountability, we have worked also with social reports on state responsibilities on the right to health. In the terms of accountability, we are part of the International Initiative on Maternal Mortality and Human Rights, which has succeeded amongst other organizations to try to launch a United Nations Human Rights Council resolution that states maternal mortality as a human rights concern. That was last year, and that is giving a good follow-up to the consequences of this resolution. We have promoted a very interesting initiative of citizen surveillance to hold health providers accountable in terms of quality of the health services, and this is driven by the rural women leaders themselves. We have different examples of addressing discrimination, conflict resolution, and sustainability that, because due to time reasons, I can't go ahead with them. And I will finish with some lessons from our experience. The first conclusion maybe is that applying a right-based approach to our work on health shows that such an approach is both feasible and practical to apply. The right-based programming principles that I have mentioned, the 6 programming principles, are key aspects of our approach to promote good governance. However, we face challenges. One is mentioned in the second letter, the letter B, is that the policy-making cycle in Peru is not so rational as we study in the universities. It's more, as it has been described, a muddling plus more muddling through process. You advance and you sometimes go back, and that's because we don't have a public service career, and many times the people that come to a government change everything that was being made by other governments, and then we lose very good things. But also, sometimes we have problems of capacities to go ahead with good policies that don't have the enough resources that they needed. That's why we used to say that we need to work with both sides. We need to work with the right holders and its representatives to increase its voice, to help them to find the ways to influence political decisions. That's one side. And we have to work with the duty bearers, those who have duties or obligations in terms of health rights, which are the public officers, to make them understand that working with a right-based approach is not necessarily dangerous to them, is not going to underpin their own position and government mechanisms, but is going to contribute with a dialogue that is going to benefit of all of both of them. So we have from on one side the people and its representatives, we have in the other side those with obligations towards the people. And we have at the center the quality of the space of interaction that also has to have an special attention, because for example in Peruvian health system there are very few spaces for the people to have real dialogues with the health providers or the health authorities. They have been began to appear, and we describe that in the chapter. They have begun to appear, but there still needs to be strengthened. However, we try to represent that in a graphic, which is this one. It looks complicated, but it's just to say, in one place we used to set some years ago, here are the right holders. In the other place is the, in the other side is the duty bearers. At the center is the point of interface between the community and the duty bearers. This interaction could be influenced by the broader policy environment, and even by the international community, because as it was being said, sometimes here comes the health sector reform processes with an extremely cost-effective or cost-efficiency attitude that just don't care about citizen participation on giving a voice to the people. We used to represent this with this graphic, but actually, and this is the last thought that I want to share with you, if we would be in a cinema with these three-dimensional things that now exist, let's say like the avatar thing, and you put yourself the lenses, this relation that seems that could be so easy to get is really like this, no? People in one side and a big gap of power and the government and the officers in the other side. So it's not just a matter of, sorry for the Spanish, it's just not a matter of capacities. It's a matter of how do we get both actors engaged in a win-to-win situation. And that's what we are working now with different actors of the civil society, but also in some influencing actors of the government, so we could try to really get this relation as it should be, a more equitable, a more horizontal, a more enrichful situation for both of them. So, significant sustainable change don't depend only on more resources or even on more training or financing. It can only happen if the poor people or its representatives have much greater involvement in shaping health policies, in shaping health practices, in shaping health programs. And that's maybe the main message that I bring. Right-based approaches definitely has to deal with power relations, has to deal with people that have to have a say, has to deal with duty bearers that have to understand better their role. And I think we are in that road, and we are going to continue with that. Thank you.